Hello and welcome to the Future of Work podcast. I'm Zeina Awad. Well, if you're someone who thinks about technology and work, or if you're simply thinking about your own job, there's probably one big question on your mind. How is AI going to affect what I do? And it is a question without a simple or straightforward answer. But one thing we can say with certainty is that the way that generative AI or Gen AI is transforming the world of work is profound. And the effects of that transformation are far from neutral. Unlike traditional AI, which analyzes data and provides recommendations, Gen AI actually creates things. It can draft documents, produce charts and graphics, and generate content. In short, it performs tasks that we once thought were uniquely human. And according to a newly released ILO report, women are more exposed to the risks associated with Gen AI than men are. Women are more concentrated in jobs where tasks are more easily automated. They're underrepresented in occupations related to artificial intelligence, science, and tech. And because Gen AI systems can and do reproduce biases that already exist in our societies, women are more likely to be affected by AI-driven gender stereotyping. Well, with me today to delve into this new report and help us understand what all of this means for women in the world of work is Anam Parvez Butt, gender equality and non-discrimination specialist at the ILO and the lead author of the report. Anam, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Zeina.
Let's start with the big picture. What does this new report tell us about Gen AI and gender?
So generative AI, as we know, is rapidly reshaping the world of work. As we speak, you know, world leaders, industry experts are gathered in New Delhi at the AI Global Summit. And what our report clearly shows is that the impacts of generative AI are likely not to be gender neutral. And this is because AI is landing in a labor market where there are pre-existing inequalities, where, you know, women and men do not always have equal access to jobs, to opportunities, and protections. And so to delve deeper into this in our report, we analyzed data from around 84 countries, and we applied a newly developed ILO index that measures the extent to which different occupations and specific tasks within those occupations are likely to be exposed to Gen AI. And what we found is particularly striking. We found that female-dominated occupations are almost twice as likely to be exposed to generative AI than male-dominated ones. I think the figures are 29% versus 16%, if I remember correctly. And female-dominated occupations also face highest automation risks. And the third thing we find is that the issue is pervasive. Women are more exposed than men in over 88% of the countries in our sample.
Can you give us some examples of what these jobs are and why these jobs are more at risk of automation?
Sure. So the kinds of jobs that we're talking about are across many economies: clerical, administrative, business support roles. These are roles, I should emphasize, that, you know, keep organizations running. They're incredibly important. These are roles like payroll clerks, receptionists, secretaries, data entry operators, and also translators. But they also involve a higher degree of what we call codifiable or routine tasks, tasks that AI is more suited to replicating or automating. By contrast, male-dominated occupations like manufacturing, like manual trades, construction, involve more physical tasks. And these are more difficult or harder to automate using AI. But it's also important, I think, to emphasize that it's not just about different occupations. Even within the same occupations, we find that women are concentrated in lower level roles where, you know, they perform more of these routine tasks. Men tend to occupy roles that are more senior, more technical, decision-making roles, which involve a higher degree of, you know, abstract or analytical tasks, which are more likely to be complemented rather than substituted by AI. These patterns of occupational segregation persist not by accident, but really because of key structural drivers. And I would like to highlight three here. Mm-hmm. The first being social norms and gender stereotypes that influence not only educational and career choices, but also influence workplace policies and practices. Mm-hmm. And these are, beliefs around what is considered appropriate work for women or men, this idea that women have less aptitude for science and mathematics, that they're less, likely to thrive in leadership positions. And this tends to then channel women into more caring, administrative, and supportive roles, mm-hmm. whilst channeling men into the kind of more senior, decision-making roles that I spoke of earlier. The second factor that I would highlight would be unequal care responsibility. So globally, women perform 3/4 of unpaid care work. And this not only limits their ability to engage in the labor market, it also influences the types of jobs that they do.
Right.
Oftentimes pushing them into, more part-time or flexible work arrangements to be able to balance, paid work with caring responsibilities. And so we really need to address these structural drivers. And the third that I would highlight would be economic policies, specifically macroeconomic and sectoral policies that really shape the structures of our economy in ways that can sometimes be gendered. They influence which sectors expand and which contract in our economies, where decent jobs are being created, and importantly, who has access to them.
That's interesting because you've just laid out how gender stereotypes and biases impact the structures in which female professionals and workers operate. If we were to now look at AI models and generative AI models, how are these models internalizing these biases and therefore reproducing them in their work?
Yeah, that is an important question. And I think we need to understand that AI learns from historical data. So where this data reflects inequalities or is based on unrepresented, representative and biased data, then AI systems will replicate it. And there are studies that really, delve into the serious implications of this. For instance, recruitment tools that are based on, profiles of previous hires can penalize resumes of not only women, but also people from disadvantaged groups. Mm-hmm. Pay setting mechanisms, when they're based on salary histories, can replicate gender pay gaps. And it's particularly, concerning for women who face intersecting forms of discrimination based on race, ethnicity, age, disability, and migration status, because those risks can be further compounded.
In your research, did you come across a particular area where you could clearly see how gender stereotyping and biases were reproduced in a particular usage of Gen AI?
Yes. Now, I don't recall the exact name of the study. I mean, this part of our study was really drawing on secondary research. The example was related to recruitment, mm-hmm. and it had to do with how CVs were being screened using AI tools. And basically, the results showed that there were embedded not only gender but racial biases, and that AI was producing sort of shortlists or recommendations of shortlists that prioritized white sounding and male sounding names over others. So that's a concrete example.
So where do we go from here? I know that the report does include a number of recommendations. What can we do in order to counter this at this point in the development of Gen AI?
Sure. So in our report, we really emphasize, and this is a point that ILO has emphasized in other publications and in other fora, is that the impacts of generative AI are not predetermined. And we absolutely can, and in fact, we have a responsibility to really ensure that AI systems promote equality, that they improve working conditions, that they address rather than deepen disparities. And so in our report, we emphasize the importance of really embedding gender equality in the design, the development, and the governance of AI systems to train AI tools on unbiased, representative, and frankly speaking, high quality data sets to expand women's access to not only AI related jobs, but also decision-making roles within those jobs, and to really address the underlying drivers of occupational segregation, the inequalities in care, the gender stereotypes, and lastly, to create the enabling environment or conditions to advance gender equality in the world of work so that we kind of level the playing field and so AI does not arrive on unequal grounds. And for that, strengthening labor market institutions and employment protections is really important, as well as designing and implementing economic policies that embed gender equality as a core objective so that these technological transformations, you know, really deliver decent jobs for both women and men alike.
Anam, are there instances where Gen AI is being used for good?
Yes, absolutely. And it demonstrates that, in fact, it can be used to really promote and advance gender equality in the world of work. New tools have been developed and deployed, you know, responsibly in ways that are enabling employers to really detect gender bias in job advertisements, for instance, to analyze, you know, pay data to address gender pay gaps, and also to strengthen the mechanisms to prevent violence and harassment in the world of work. So, yes, absolutely. But again, to emphasize that it's only when AI is designed inclusively and deployed responsibly that we see these more sort of positive impacts. And I just also like to say that, you know, technological transformations and gender equality are not mutually exclusive goals. They can be mutually reinforcing. But for that, really, the right policies, the good intentions, and frankly speaking, the political will are really needed.
And everyone has a role to play. And we at the ILO are a tripartite organization. So what role do you see for our social partners, governments, workers, and employers, organizations? What role do they have in this journey towards a more even playing field in the world of technology and artificial intelligence?
So their role is absolutely central because how AI is introduced is not only a technical decision, but a governance decision. And so first and foremost, you know, governments have a really key role to play to really set the regulatory and policy framework within which these technologies are then introduced. And that includes things like ensuring, you know, transparency, data protection, that non-discrimination safeguards are in place, that there are accountability mechanisms, and also to design and implement economic, labor market, and care policies that really drive progress and address those very persistent and sticky inequalities in the world of work. And employers equally have an essential role to play. I mean, the International Organization of Employers, IOE, has recently highlighted how, you know, the adoption of AI should not be done on an ad hoc basis, but should really be driven by clear AI strategies that companies need to invest in skilling and reskilling, that they have to make sure that the tools that are being introduced are bettering and not worsening working conditions by carrying out ethical risk assessments. And then lastly, but certainly not least, we have, you know, workers' organizations, which are equally important and critical. And the ITUC, the International Trade Union Confederation, has also highlighted how they play an essential role in ensuring that the voices of all workers are heard and how AI systems are designed and monitored and assessed.
Fascinating. Very interesting. Thank you so much, Anam. I'm afraid we have to leave it here. And this does bring us to the end of this episode. Thank you again to Anam Parvez Butt, ILO gender specialist and lead author of the report on AI and gender, for helping us to make sense of these important issues. And thank you to our viewers and listeners for joining us. Be sure to tune in again as we continue to explore the major transformations shaping the world of work today. And you can follow us online at ILO on X, TikTok, YouTube, at ILO.org on Facebook, Instagram, Threads, and Blue Sky. And we are on LinkedIn, International Labor Organization. Thank you again for listening and for watching, and we look forward to welcoming you again soon. Goodbye.